Thursday of the KSFR Fun Drive. And I would like to welcome John Andrews. He is a member of the board of KSFR. He is a Shakespeare scholar. He is a mover and shaker around town in so many ways, especially during that wonderful Shakespeare month. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
And we're going to be hearing an author named Bruce Berlin in a few minutes in a show that I recorded yesterday. But right now, we're going to talk about why people should call right now, 428-1393, and make a contribution to the station. What do you think?
I think it's a great idea.
And why?
Because this is really appointment radio, particularly this hour. I know so many people who during drive time in the morning feel that they just have to tune in to KSFR to listen to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. Essential information about everything that is happening in Santa Fe, but everything that is happening in the world as well. And I just can't imagine what life would be like without the work that you do.
Oh, that's awfully nice of you to say, John Andrews. The number is 428-1393. We're going to have a $1,000 goal for this hour. And if you make a contribution, you can get one of the phone volunteers will tell you more details, but you can get a book by the author we're going to hear in just a couple of minutes. But I just want to say that I'm very grateful to have had this platform for all of these years and to be able to feature not only national and international people who come in from out of town, but also really the local authors, the local playwrights and actors and performers and activists and animal people. And there's so many interesting and amazing people. And those people make up a community. And I think one of the things about public radio, local community public radio, is that you allow the community to get to know itself. You allow people to get to know each other, each other's ideas, each other's sensibilities. And this town has a kind of unique sensibility. I don't know, even after all these years, how I would exactly characterize that sensibility. But there is a deep caring and thoughtfulness here. And a sense of belonging here, even for people who weren't necessarily born and raised in this town, and those of us who've been here for a long time but aren't from here, there is a sense that we all belong to this place and we learn about each other through public radio.
That's right. And when you travel, you will find that just about everywhere you go, if you mention Santa Fe, people will know something about it.
Yeah.
And you will often find, at least I do, that menus will have at least one item that is identified with Santa Fe. For example, if you go to a Starbucks in New York, you can pick up a Santa Fe panini sandwich.
No way.
That's right.
Yeah, that's because we're so Italian.
Exactly. And I can remember on one occasion being at Paddington Station in London, looking at a little bagel shop and discovering to my surprise that one of the options was a Santa Fe tuna melt.
Good heavens.
I should have bought one, but I wasn't sure that I could be certain that they would be serving good, authentic Pecos River tuna.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. Deep sea tuna of the Southwest is a rare and precious commodity.
That's right.
428-1393 is the number. Let's get the phones ringing. Let's make our goal and keep this radio station on the air for another 6 months. That's how we do it. We do a fun drive every 6 months. Listeners keep this going. They keep this show going. So if you like what you hear on the Radio Cafe, please call now, 428-1393. And we're going to hear from author Bruce Berlin, who by the way, is going to be speaking at Opposite Bookstore this Saturday at 3 in the afternoon and signing books and things like that. So let's hear that, and we'll be back. I'd like now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Bruce Berlin. He is the author of the new book, Breaking Big Money's Grip on America, Working Together to Revive Our Democracy. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Good to have you here. Very important issue, kind of the in so many ways the mother of all issues, that is money and politics. Lots of people talking about it. How did you come to write this book?
Most of my adult life I've been involved in political issues one way or another. My background is in law. But particularly with this issue, I think you might say it started around the Iraq War, when we got to see, after time went on, that the war wasn't really about weapons of mass destruction. It was about oil.
Are you talking about the 2003 or the...
Yes.
Yeah.
The United States and Western countries and big oil like Exxon and so forth were behind the idea of let's see if we can go into Iraq and take control of that oil. Dick Cheney was an oil man, our vice president at the time. That was very disturbing, and it was clear that the United States spent $2 trillion and hundreds of thousands of Iraqi lives and some thousands of American lives and lots of injuries for a war that was not necessary and was basically over oil. So there was a very big example of big oil and big money controlling U.S. policy. And then you move on to the recession, the Great Recession in 2008, and there were, again, you had Wall Street manipulating the markets and the fraud that went on, and again, big money causing havoc in America. So there were two big issues. And I was a full-time lawyer at the time, so I was looking at these things, and I was active in various political issues. But once I retired in the fall of 2012, that became my main objective, was to write a book, and this seemed like the perfect topic.
And the whole issue of not only what the problem is and how did we get here, but how do we go forward and what's in the way? And I want to talk to you about all of those things. But before we get to the nature of a movement to really deal with money in politics, I wanted to ask you, how do you think we got to this point, and describe the point that we are at now compared to perhaps what the political situation of money in politics was when you were a young man?
Well, money in politics has always been a big factor. I don't think there's ever been a time when big money and big corporations didn't have influence over the government. And it's just gotten worse and worse during our lifetimes. What's extreme about it is that we now have tremendous income inequality in this country. Before President Reagan became president, the average CEO was making 30, 40, 50 times the average worker. And now the average CEO of a big corporation is making 500, 600 times as much as the average worker is. As I note in my book, about 95% of all the increase in income or wealth that has happened in the last 8 or 10 years has gone to the top 1%. So it's just really multiplied incredibly.
And the people who are, quote unquote, creating that wealth will argue that the more wealth they create, the more there is to go around. But in fact, that's not happening. It's not
absolutely
getting
not
to the
happening.
People, and they're essentially keeping it.
Correct.
So we are in a situation where this whole, and you describe this in your book, the whole problem is in so many domains of our life, and it affects everything from energy policy to war policy to banking policy, and all of it goes back to the electoral system and how influential all of those different sectors are on the political system, including the great influence of both campaign contributions and lobbyists. Talk about that.
Well, one of the statistics that I point out in my book is that, you know, people say, well, look, the unions, they have a lot of power and lobbying and whatnot. But the fact is that for every dollar unions and citizens, nonprofit corporations that like Common Cause and those public interest groups spend on trying to influence legislation, big corporations spend $34. So it's 1 to 34. And that's a huge difference,
right,
in influence. Plus the fact, the amount of lobbyists, the amount of lobbyists that the pharmaceutical industry had in the healthcare bill in Obamacare before it was passed, they had like 175 people who were lobbying for their interests for that bill. And then you also have the whole thing of the revolving door, where government people, whether they're actual politicians that have been in office or staff people, go through the revolving, what's called the revolving door, and work in private industry, and then lobby their former bosses or their former colleagues. So they have this built-in connection and network that really gives them a lot of extra influence and advantage than the average person does, or a nonprofit common cause person has.
And the result of all that is basically a huge compromise on democracy in the United States, to the point where, I mean, I've heard people say this is no longer genuinely a democracy.
Well, a number of people said to me, we've never really even had a democracy. It's always been this way. It's just more in our face right now. And yes, I don't think it's a democracy. I mean, you know, the average voter, the average person in America has no real influence on what goes on in Washington or what laws are passed or not passed.
We're talking to Bruce Berlin about his book, Breaking Big Money's Grip on America. And we have one thank you right now, Katie Yonda, who called. Thank you so much for your pledge and for listening to KSFR and the Radio Cafe. Now, I want to also thank John Andrews, who is a board member of KSFR, who's with us today. And he has a challenge. He's making a $250 pledge and would like to call out to one other person to also make a $250 pledge.
Please, please.
And that is a very generous contribution. And I know there's a lot of people who are able to do that, who are listening right now. And sometimes you think, oh, gosh, you know, that's a lot of money. I could buy several pairs of shoes or several fabulous dinners or whatever. But, you know, that if it's an amount of money that that won't prevent you from doing something important like paying your mortgage or, you know, fixing your roof or something like that, if you can afford it, please give it now by making a call, 428-1393, because it means so much to us. A low-budget public radio station, it means every dollar goes a really long way, and that's certainly what it's like here.
And when you think about it, what this is $1 a day for 250 days. How many things can you buy for a dollar that would be as beneficial not only to you but to your community?
You know, if you think about it, I do about 250 radio cafes a year. So
yes.
That's about a dollar
is that
a show.
Right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
I mean, it's 52 weeks a year and 5 days a week, and, you know, there's some days off.
Yes,
so,
right.
But that's about it.
It's about what you would pay for a newspaper.
That's right.
For an inexpensive newspaper, not for the New York Times.
So 428-1393 is the number, and you can get a copy of the book from the author that you were just listening to, Bruce Berlin, Breaking Big Money's Grip on America, and Lord knows that that is something that many, many people are concerned about, and the question of how to make a mass movement is on everybody's mind.
It's certainly a very big part of today's political campaigns, is it not?
It is indeed. And the hugeness of difference between one candidate and the next is, it's almost staggering that we have so many different choices, and they represent such vastly different things.
Absolutely.
428-1393 is the number here in KSFR Mission Control, and the phones are a little bit quiet, so we would love it if you are a regular Radio Cafe listener. Just pick up that telephone and make a call, 428-1393, and make a pledge to the Radio Cafe and to KSFR and to public radio, and ultimately to yourself, because when you make a pledge and you keep this radio station on the air, you are basically improving or maintaining the lifestyle to which you are accustomed by keeping it going and being a part of keeping it going.
Absolutely. It's a way to keep Santa Fe special, and it's a way to not only bring the world to Santa Fe, but bring Santa Fe to the world through programs like this that can be heard anywhere.
And this can be heard on the web. If you go to santafe.radiocafe.org, you can get a podcast. You can even subscribe to this show, I found out a while back, by going to your, if you have a smartphone with the podcast app, you can punch in Santa Fe Radio Cafe and voila, you can hear the show on your phone. You can also stream it at ksfr.org if you are traveling out of town and at 8:05 Mountain Time are near your computer. That might be, heck, I have a friend who's in Pakistan right now, so that would be at something like 9:05 p.m., but she can listen to it.
That's right. And if you happen to miss a program that you really would like to hear, say you missed yesterday's Santa Fe Radio Cafe program, you can go to Mary Charlotte's website and listen to a podcast.
That's it, exactly it. And if you didn't hear yesterday's show, it was wonderful. Meow Wolf, the CEO and founder of Meow Wolf, Vince Cadlebeck, was here talking about creativity and art and business and young people and all kinds of things in this town. And today we're talking with Bruce Berlin and John Andrews. And tomorrow we've got a special show for you as well. 428-1393 is the phone number. So give us a call and please support this radio station and this program. If you like the program, please support it. I mean, it's really as simple as that. We're listener-supported public radio. We've got a $1,000 goal for this hour. John Andrews just made up a beautiful chunk of it, and we're making a call out to a $250 donor and to a $10 donor.
You can give $5 donor.
And a $5 donor. You can give $5 a month or $10 a month. You can give one-time contributions of any size. The main thing is that everybody who's listening now, if they love what they're hearing, if they listen to this show, become a part of it. The number, I'm going to give it slowly because somebody called yesterday and I gave the number about 473,000 times and yet I heard I couldn't get that number. So here it is. 428-1393. We're going to go back.
That's easy to remember.
That's easy to remember. So we're going to go back to the recorded program right now, and you can score a copy of Bruce's book. So let's keep going with Bruce Berlin and his book, Breaking Big Money's Grip on America. We're talking to Bruce Berlin about his book, Breaking Big Money's Grip on America, Working Together to Revive Our Democracy. Now, you make the point that there have been democracy movements throughout the history of the United States, and that they've always faced tremendous odds, and they've always won. What are some examples?
Well, I wouldn't say they're democracy. Well, they're people movement, populist movements. I mean, you have women's suffrage.
Well, that's democracy. Right?
Yeah, no, they're all for creating a larger and more inclusive democracy in different segments of the population. The labor movement, I mean, for the 8-hour work week, or I'm sorry, the 8-hour work day and the 40-hour work week, and better working conditions. The civil rights movement.
Which is ongoing.
Hopefully many, yes, it's ongoing, but the big changes that were made with the Civil Rights Act and the Voter Rights Act in the 1960s. More recently, the climate change movement and the LGBT movement for gay and lesbian rights.
And all of these faced incredible odds. Walk us through a little bit how each of these movements succeeded and what kind of obstacles they faced in their time.
One of the biggest obstacles is the status quo. The status quo never wants to change, and the status quo is powerful, the establishment. So getting people to accept the fact that gay and lesbians have the same rights as heterosexual people have to get married is a new idea for a lot of people. And so it takes a lot of people, a lot of money, a lot of publicity, and force. Is you always have to push and push and push and push. And it's amazing how fast the gay and lesbian right movement was able to get marriage equality in many states. But I also could add, you go back to women's suffrage, it took them 70 years to get the right to vote, and that's half the population. So it's not always quick.
Another piece that's really important, in addition to, for example, lobbying and campaign subsidies and things like that, is, and you've mentioned Wall Street, but the amount of money, and you bring this out in your book, that has been given to bailouts of companies that are like banks and so on that actually aren't working. And this is a pet peeve of mine in, you know, people who believe in free market capitalism. It's like in free market capitalism, when a business fails, it dies. You don't bail
so.
It out.
You would think so. Yes. Yeah. But that doesn't happen because the power of Donald Trump is a perfect example of that. He's gone bankrupt four times, but he's been able to arise again. The bankruptcy laws are written to help those businesses as opposed to the people who invested in them or the employees. They don't necessarily come out so well, but the owners seem to bounce back.
The money that we heard about in the bank bailout during the Great Recession was, as you say in your book, only the tip of the iceberg. What was the actual amount of bailout that taxpayers paid to these Wall Street banks? And how did you find those numbers?
Well, through research, but I believe my research was over $4 trillion, actually, of American taxpayer money was spent to bail out the banks.
$4 trillion. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money.
It certainly is.
Where does that money come from?
A lot of it is just made up. The Federal Reserve has the right, and the Congress gave it the right, to print more money. I mean, some of it obviously came from the taxpayers, but some of it came from the government just printing more money.
So when you talk about a democracy movement in America right now, you've got a section in your book where you talk about what should be the goals of a real democracy movement. What are those goals?
Well, you know, there's a lot of movements right now, climate change and, you know, gun control and health care reform and so forth, and immigration reform. But my reading, and three-quarters of people polled recently, is that until we get money out of politics, none of these other issues are really going to be able to be resolved because of the control that big money has on policymaking and our politicians. So one big goal, which is, you know, a lot of people are working on already, is getting rid of the Citizens United case, which says that money is speech and corporations are people. But that's a big thing. I mean, to get that accomplished, you have to have a new constitutional amendment.
And overturn a Supreme Court ruling.
Yes. And there's a couple other Supreme Court cases that Citizens United have been built on. Buckley v. Vallejo. And then since Citizens United, there was another case, McCutcheon versus the FEC. So those three together all need to be overturned to help us get money out of politics. Gerrymandering is another big issue. Right now we have, I give several examples in the book, but one I'll give right now is that because state legislatures in most states are able to manipulate the districts, the boundaries of the districts of congressional offices, like in Pennsylvania, their population allows them to have 18 representatives in Congress. In the 2012 election, Democrats won that election over the state, I think by maybe 500,000 to 1,000,000 people, something like that. But yet, 13 of the 18 districts are in Republican hands because of the way the boundaries have been manipulated so that they squeeze the Democrats into these smaller districts, and the state legislature, controlled by Republicans, were able to do that. And that's happened around the country. So the fact that we have 50 or 60 more Republicans in the House is not representative of the real population of the country. So therefore, we have a minority party that somehow, is because of gerrymandering, has gotten the majority in the House of Representatives.
And Democrats have just let this happen?
Democrats do not have the backbone that Republicans have. They just somehow, they're more willing to compromise. I don't know. I just don't quite understand the Democrats.
We're talking to Bruce Berlin about his book, Breaking Big Money's Grip on America. And we are here in the KSFR studios, and the phones have been remarkably quiet. We are not even close to our goal of $1,000 for this hour. So please call right now and make a contribution. We're looking for that $250 match to John Andrews' very generous contribution. And we are looking for some small contributions. Mostly, we would like the phone to ring with any kind of contribution, comment, or other kind of communication for the Radio Cafe. Hey, I love that sound.
Good sound, yes.
428-1393. We've got a couple of volunteers in here, and let's get them busy.
Absolutely. This is a fascinating discussion, by the way. It's one of the dozens of conversations that you can enjoy all week long on KSFR when Mary Charlotte brings guests in to talk about topics both local, regional, national, and in fact international.
Interplanetary.
Interplanetary. Let's go all the way. Intergalactic.
It's true. Sometimes we talk about the origins of the universe.
Why not?
Well, you know, there have been a few astrophysicists on the air from time to time. And so I never really thought about this way. The range of the show extends from the origins of the universe several billion years ago, I think that's what it is, and to the vastness of space, to the tininess of cell biology and particle physics.
Yes. And all of that you can do talking just to local authors. Am I correct about that? Scientists at Los Alamos, participants in the Santa Fe Institute, so many cultural organizations in Santa Fe that you can draw upon for these explorations.
We're so lucky to live here and to have access to this kind of public radio, whether we actually live here or whether we're streaming it or accessing it remotely. We were talking the other day about how there's a lot of really wonderful public radio stations across the country, but a lot of them kind of sound the same because they put the same terrific NPR programming on or public radio programming on, but there's really not that much of a local component. And KSFR has really found a niche with that local piece, which is not only that there's interesting people here, but it really makes the community coherent. So that's no joke.
And I think in many ways, the program that you do is the glue that holds large portions of the community together. When we participate in this community, I think we're very much aware of what a special place we live in and feel very fortunate to be here and to provide support to this kind of activity.
428-1393, and we'd like to hear a few more ringy-dings on the telephone. It makes a huge difference, and it makes a huge difference to me personally. When the phone rings, I feel like people are listening and they care. When the phone doesn't ring, I think, am I being taken for granted here?
Yes, and we've got a volunteer sitting by the phone looking like the Maytag repairman. he's really disconsolate. It would really cheer him up if you would give him a call. Thank you.
There we go. 428-1393. And for those of you who were not watching TV in those days, the whole Maytag repairman concept is Maytag appliances work so well that the repairman has nothing to do.
He's the loneliest man in town.
Ola Peterson gave a very, very generous contribution to KSFR. Ola, I hug you and send you dog love. Ola Peterson is one of the amazing members of this community who runs basically a kind of a hospice for older animals. And it is one of the most beautiful and loving and heart-filled places in this town. And that's saying a lot. And she runs that place with so much love and competence, which is just a beautiful combination. So thank you so much, Ola Peterson, and let Ola be an inspiration to all of our other listeners today to give a call to 428-1393.
1-800-420-1390. Hear that number again, 428-1393. We'd love to hear those phones ringing. We have volunteers who are standing by to take your call.
That's right. So we are going to now go back to our interview, and we love to hear those phones ringing. So give a call and keep it going through this whole next segment, and we'll be back in a little bit. Another goal that you write about in your book is to establish public financing of all congressional presidential elections. How would that work? Where would the money come from?
Well, you could say that every congressional candidate gets $500,000, or based on the number of, well, in the Senate, it would have to vary, because New York State is obviously a much bigger state than New Mexico. The media markets in New York are much more expensive than New Mexico, and so forth. So you'd have to, for the Senate, a lot more money for Senate races in New York than you would in New Mexico. And to some degree for the House, too, even though you're representing the same, proportionally the same, almost same amount of people. The media markets are very different depending on California, New York, here, and so forth. It would come from the taxpayers.
Yeah. Have you looked at this whole question of why it is, like how it works, that money is so influential? Is it really TV advertising? Is that the problem? I find it so hard to really believe that people make up their minds about whom to vote for based on a 30-second TV ad.
Well, I mean, you know, everybody's different, and some people, I think, do, you know, and some people get on the internet. I think a lot more people these days get on the internet, but most people who are not, you know, wonks or political people that, you know, that's their main thing, they don't spend much time thinking about politics or about who to vote for. You know, I don't think it takes a whole lot for most people to see a few ads and read a couple articles and so forth, and make up their minds. Politics is not the main interest of most Americans.
So that makes the mass movement difficult. I mean, because I was thinking about, as I was looking at your book, you've got anti-slavery. I mean, slavery is so heinous and so cruel, and you've got a really clear moral issue. Women's suffrage and women's rights in general, same thing. It's disenfranchisement of a very clearly defined group of people. Civil rights, once again. We're talking black and white. I mean, we're talking a clearly definable issue. When we talk about money in politics, it's much more amorphous. It's a place where a lot of people agree. I mean, from the Tea Party to the far left and a lot of people in between. But you don't recognize your brethren on the street. So, like, how do you bring people together around this issue?
Good question. Tough question. You have to make it personal. People who lost their homes in the recession or their jobs or their cars, that was personal. And for them to understand that it was through Wall Street manipulation that a lot of that happened makes it personal that, oh, we need to get money out of politics because these Wall Street banks were able to manipulate the markets and get the politicians afterwards, after all this downfall happened and millions of people lost their homes and their cars and so forth. Wall Street people are doing as good or better than ever. And it's because the government, including our president, has not gone after those people. And if you let those people off, you don't prosecute them, they're going to do it again. So you got to connect the dots.
I mean, and this is the thing that I think is so tricky in American politics, is that whereas you know and I know and probably most of our listeners know that whatever problems they're having in their lives around things like interest rates or mortgage derivative swaps screwing you over.
What are those?
Yeah, exactly. But we know that these problems have been caused by forces far beyond our control. And yet we all, most of us, have this sense of personal responsibility that if I lose my house, it's my responsibility that it happened, and it's my responsibility to figure out how to survive. And let's say you lose your house, or the value of your house goes through the floor, and you're, as they say, underwater. How does joining a mass movement help you in the short run? That's another thing that's so tricky about this.
That's a good point. It may not help you in the short run, but it may lift your spirits, because then you come together with other people who have suffered the same or similar circumstances. And joining a movement, whether it's your church or your civic organization or a democracy movement, coming together it's partly a spiritual thing. And knowing that you're not alone, that we're all in this together. And unfortunately, America, the United States, was built on this frontier kind of individualism. I can do it myself. I'm going to build my business. I'm going to find gold in California. And some people succeed that way, but most people don't. And we have a much better chance of succeeding. In fact, the only way, in my opinion, that we're going to succeed in terms of changing the government and getting what we really want is if we do recognize that we're in this together and we work together and build a movement.
You said the word spiritual a moment ago, and you are a practitioner of Buddhism. How has your Buddhist practice affected the way you see the democracy movement?
Well, Buddhism basically is that we're all one, regardless of gender or profession or whatever. We're all interconnected. And as Americans, I believe we're all interconnected. And we have to use that spirit of interconnectedness to come together and to find a way to build a movement that's going to overcome this huge obstacle of big money. And it's not going to be easy, for sure.
What do you see as the strategies for doing it?
Well, I think it was Tip O'Neill who said, all politics is local. And so we have to start locally. And in my book, I come up with this idea of creating DOCs, democracy organizing committees. The country is ailing. We need to heal it. We need DOCs to heal it. And DOCs would be groups in local communities like Santa Fe that were broad-based, that were bipartisan or nonpartisan, that included women and minorities and business people, Republicans and Democrats, not party leaders, labor people, and so forth. And in fact, in the January issue of Greenfire Times, I wrote an article that gave an example. And the example that I used there was, we have a law in New Mexico that regulates oil and gas. That law was passed in 1935, and it has not been amended since. And that's 80 years ago. And so we are using 1935 economics to regulate and to, if an oil or gas company drills and pollutes the water, they are fined. But they're fined based on 1935 economic standards. Now, everybody wants clean water. I mean, that's a broad issue that seems like whether you're a Republican or Democrat or business person or laborer or whoever you are, you want to make sure your water that's coming into your house is clean and pure. So that would be an issue that you could organize a broad coalition around, a DOC, a Democracy Organizing Committee. And I know Common Cause has been working on this, but it's got to be a broad coalition, because at the same time, you have 3.5 times as much money by the oil and gas industry lobbying the state legislature against any amendments as you have Common Cause and other public interest groups lobbying for change. So you create a DOC and you bring more and more people together around this issue and you build on something like that.
How do you think that state legislatures and our national Congress would look different and behave differently if we had campaign finance reform and a voter's bill of rights and redistricting and the end of gerrymandering and so on? If we really got money out of politics, what do you think, how would the world shift?
Incredibly. Because then you wouldn't have congresspeople pretty much owned by their corporate sponsors. they wouldn't be getting money from Exxon or the pharmaceutical lobby or, depending on what issue you talk about, the gun lobby. They'd only be getting money from the people through the tax system, and therefore the people's interest would be primary, not the corporate and big money interests.
Bruce Berlin is the author of Breaking Big Money's Grip on America, Working Together to Revive Our Democracy. He will be at Upsit Bookstore this coming Saturday at 3 o'clock, speaking and signing books. That's in the DeVargas Mall right here in Santa Fe. Anything you want to let us know before we go today?
Well, yeah, you know, it's one thing to support this idea. It's one thing to say, yes, we should be doing this. But it's another thing to make a commitment and to get out and really be part of a movement and to help build a process that would make change. You know, people's lives, they're busy. Everybody has their families and their jobs and so forth. And so this does not necessarily or easily come to the top of their list of priorities. But I think we are in a crisis. And if we don't make it a priority, we are moving towards a full-blown plutocracy, which is a government run by and for the very wealthy. So I would urge people to get involved, read my book, join nonprofits or other organizations that are working to get money out of politics and help build this movement.
Bruce Berlin, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
And if people want to find out more on that book, they can go to Breaking Big Money. Let's see. I got the website here, breakingbigmoneysgrip.com. We are back here with John Andrews, and we have less than 10 minutes left to reach our goal of $1,000 for this hour. And we have thanked Ulla Peterson and Katie Yanda and John Andrews and also Aria Ponciroli and a certain anonymous donor. And we got a shout out from Hannah, who wants to link what we just heard from Bruce Berlin to the Occupy movement. Lots of good stuff, but we still haven't reached our $1,000 goal yet for this hour. So
there we go. All
that's right. A nice sound. 428-1393 is the number to make that sound here in the phone room. So, John Andrews, you are a resident of Santa Fe for not forever, but for quite a long time.
Yeah, for 8 years. Yeah. Moved here from Washington, D.C. But I'm actually a native New Mexican. I grew up in Carlsbad.
Is that right?
Yes. So in a way, this was a kind of homecoming for me. And since my wife and I have been here, Jan is also a New Mexico native. She grew up in Gallup and Albuquerque. We have just loved getting reacquainted with our native state and coming to know it better.
Yeah, yeah. Big, big, big state.
Absolutely. A wonderful state. And there are so many wonderful things about being in Santa Fe in particular, one of which is the opportunity to attend all the spectacular events that are available at the Lenzic Performing Arts Center. And we were talking a few minutes ago about the fact that Bob Martin, who has run the Lenzic for a decade and a half, announced yesterday that he is going to be departing. He's not quite sure what his next step will be, but I just wanted to say what a wonderful, wonderful resource he has been and what a terrific institution the Lenzic is. I can't think of any place in any other city that offers as much variety as the Lenzic does.
They do such an amazing job, and the loss of Bob Martin his departure from the Lenzic is a big blow. I'm sure they'll do a search and find another person, but it's going to be hard to replace Bob Martin. This is a big shout out to you right now, Bob, if you're listening. Bob is somebody who has so many wonderful qualities. He's, I think, a terrific manager of the space and of people. I think he's a great fundraiser. And above all, he has a sensibility for filling this wonderful performing arts center with such a tremendous diversity.
Absolutely.
Of performances and readings from, again, it's like sort of like KSFR, from the local, I mean, you know, the cavalcade of marching bands from the Santa Fe County, whatever.
Exactly.
Making it up, you know, but the local stuff to the most exquisite national and international music and performance that there is.
Yes. I had an opportunity to work with Bob several years ago when we brought Sir Derek Jacobi and his partner Richard Clifford to the Lenzic to do a special musical version of The Tempest. It had text from Shakespeare's play, but there was also a great deal of music contemporaneous with The Tempest, some of which had been inspired by the play. And there were two evenings, and both were very fully subscribed. And one of the things that was really nice about it was that it coincided with two anniversaries. One was the original performance of The Tempest in 1611, and the other was the founding of Santa Fe, which apparently was occurring about the same time that
amazing.
Shakespeare was writing the play.
Isn't that crazy to think about?
And recently we did an event at the Lenzic called Ever the Twain, which was about Shakespeare and Mark Twain's America. And who do you suppose played Mark Twain?
Bob Martin.
Absolutely. And he was wonderful. I'm quite sure that Hal Holbrook is now shaking in his boots because we now have a new Mark Twain. Who knows? Maybe Bob will be taking that on the road.
428-1393 is the number. 428-1393. And, oh, man, I got to sneeze. This is a call out to everybody who has allergies right now.
Absolutely.
I can't cure them, but...
Juniper time.
I can make you forget them with the Radio Cafe.
Yes. Now, we have volunteers who are just waiting for your call. They feel like the Maytag repairmen. They're the loneliest men in town. So please make those phones ring. These men are just desperate for an opportunity to help you help KSFR.
We're just a few $100 away from our $1,000 goal for this hour. I think we can do it in the next 4 minutes, which is all we've got, really, 3.5 minutes. Until the top of the hour, 428-1393. Please help us reach our goal for this hour and keep KSFR and keep the Radio Cafe on the air for another 6 months.
Now, Mary Charlotte, there has been news about the Radio Cafe itself lately, hasn't there? Could you tell us a little bit about that?
I can. By the way, thanks to Eileen Banaschek. Thank you for your generous contribution. The Santa Fe Baking Company closed very abruptly. I arrived a couple of days ago to do my show live from the baking company, and there were closed signs all over it. I had not been given notice, and we're waiting to see what really went down there. Apparently, the story in the paper, and I don't know anything more than what was in the paper, was that there were issues about non-payment of taxes, and the IRS came in and started confiscating money and things like that. And that's all I know. But it's not a good situation, and doesn't seem like there's a lot of future for the baking company. We are waiting to see what happens. But ladies and gentlemen, if you have another location that's open at 8 in the morning, which is a cafe or a coffee shop or something like that, where you think I can do the show, please write to Radio Cafe.
So that we can hear tinkling glasses in the background.
That's true.
Hear people ordering their coffee and...
And giggling. All the things
that
they do.
We need that ambiance, don't we?
Right. I'm serious. If you have an idea of where the show should be, please write to radiocafe@ksfr.org. So it's just about time to go. We're still waiting for those phones to ring to get a few more donations in this hour. 428-1393. John Andrews is a board member of KSFR, and I want to thank you so much for being with us.
It has been a real treat, and I love KSFR. I love your program, and we want to do everything we can to keep them on the air.